Without our integrity, without our character, what else do we have? You could have 40 years of amazing work experience. If you're not a good person, you don't treat people well, you don't work hard, it's gonna come back to bite you. So those are some of the intangibles that I tell when I'm talking to folks who are looking for experience.
Wow, this is a pretty impressive office here. I mean, got all the basketballs and so I wanted to learn a little bit more about you, get into your background, you know, and we're gonna talk about a lot of different things like leadership and team development and what how to identify talent and stuff like that. But tell me a little bit about you. Where are you from and how'd you get into all this?
Absolutely. I'm from Ohio, born and raised. Okay. Went to The Ohio State University, very proud of that.
Yep.
And graduated. Got into sports communications at a pretty early age. I love sports, and my major was in the School of Journalism. So
specific sport you were interested in, or just sports in general?
You know, growing up in Columbus, the only pro team we had was college football.
Right.
So cut my teeth on college football and Major League Baseball. Ohio State Buckeyes and Cincinnati Reds were my two passions. Mm-hmm. And started at a small agency in Columbus, and from there moved to Chicago. A lot of my friends wanted the bigger city, so we all moved up there. Mm-hmm. And my career took off at that point. I realized that communications was my passion, mm-hmm. and anything I could do to bring sports into the mix, mm-hmm. I did. So for example, my first client was with Procter & Gamble, and it was Crest toothpaste.
Uh-oh, but I'm hearing product placement. That's what Procter & Gamble.
Well, but Crest sponsored a program tied to the Cincinnati Reds and the Cleveland Indians where every time one of their players got a base hit, they would donate money to charity. Uh-huh. Then they'd get a local sponsor to match it. So even though 95% of the work I did had nothing to do with sports, that 5% that did was really what made it worthwhile to get up and go to work each day.
Yeah.
And that took me to Chicago, where I worked at Ketchum. I worked on Motorola, was a client, and they sponsored the PGA Tour Western Open. So again, 90-some percent was cellular technology and cellular phones, new products, but just enough with sports to really light the fire and keep the passion going.
So sponsorship, connecting brands with sporting events and stuff like that was your main focus?
Exactly, but always from the communication side. I was then recruited out to Nike. I moved out to Oregon. My family loved living out there, and I worked as the...
Heard a lot of green. It's very green out there.
Very green, very rainy.
Yeah.
The joke was that summer started officially on July 5th. Because from July 5th through Thanksgiving, you never got rain. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of gray days, a lot of rainy days, but it was an amazing place to live and work. Loved my time at Nike, and it was there where I really started getting the sports marketing itch. I was on the communications side. I was the manager of the USA region, all basketball, high school, college, pro, uniforms, apparel, branded activities. I handled all the communications around it. But I knew that sports marketing really was my passion. So I was close to the marketing side, but I handled communication, and then left Nike to go work at Home Depot here in Atlanta. And that's what got me to Atlanta. I was fortunate enough to handle communications around Home Depot's marketing, sponsorship, and advertising initiatives. So it's amazing when I think back, I got to work two Olympic Games,
wow.
Athens and Torino, Italy.
Yeah.
I worked on NASCAR, College Game Day, the Home Depot Center, and just could not believe the things that I got to work on. But I also knew that, number one, I was kind of done with the corporate world,
mm-hmm.
And number two, I was going to get into sports marketing one way or another. And so I made the career move rather late in life to work in sports marketing, and I moved over to the Atlanta Sports Council.
So you basically just, you know, you're working the corporate cushy job, and you're like, you know what, I just want to dive in head first, and you just, I'm going for what I always wanted to do. Is that, you kind of got that calling? Is that what
it is? I'm not sure if it was a cushy job, but the corporate world was tough.
Yeah.
Very rewarding.
Yeah.
But hard and very different than the agency world. Mm. I did set out to work the corporate world, the agency world, and then nonprofit.
Yeah.
It just happened.
Mm.
A lot of times, you just take the next great opportunity that's in front of you. And it just so happens that I had a rewarding experience at Nike and Home Depot, but that was it. I just had no more interest in working in the corporate world, and I wanted to get into sports marketing. The opportunity arose at the Atlanta Sports Council, and I took it. And the nonprofit world has its own set of challenges,
yeah.
But I love it. And I've thrived, and I've really enjoyed it, and I've been doing it now for 12 years.
What are some of the elements of working in the nonprofit world that you really enjoy?
That it's not all about the bottom line. I mean, it is. Any job we have, it's the bottom line is important. But there's a sense of doing good. There's a sense of giving back. There's a sense of taking pride in something that a lot of people are excited about that maybe doesn't have the resources that a corporate endeavor might have. Now the challenges are in the nonprofit world, obviously, you spend a good chunk of your time trying to generate revenue.
Right.
But I also compare what I'm doing now to previous jobs, where if we had a great idea in our department on the corporate side, it may not resonate that far out of our department, mm-hmm. because there's so many people who work there. There's so many initiatives that are taking place. And what I'm doing now, this is all I'm doing. So I have dived in 100% into this job, and this is all that I do. And if we make a major impact in something along the way, it's going to resonate. People are going to feel it. You're going to feel good. It's going to be good for the community. It's really more special and more meaningful. You're also exposed. If it's not successful, you're not hiding behind walls in the corporate world.
Right.
And so I learned that pretty early on, but it's sports. People like sports. You're giving back. You're making something bigger and better, and you're front and center in all of that. And that's what's been really rewarding.
So talk about some of the specifics that you do in your present job.
Absolutely. I'm the executive director of the Atlanta Tip-Off Club. The organization was founded in 1956 by a handful of folks who love basketball and try to do something to draw attention to the game in Atlanta, where it's so football centric. So they did that for about a decade. And then in 1969, the founding fathers decided that they wanted to grow the brand nationally. So they came up with an idea to create a National College Basketball Player of the Year Award. The first 12 years of the organization was centered on recognizing wonderful talent, boys and girls, high school players and coaches here in Atlanta. But the idea of taking it nationally kicked in about a decade later. And so in 1969, we presented the first Naismith Trophy to a gentleman named Lou Alcindor from UCLA. So Lou and his coach, John Wooden, flew to Atlanta for our annual banquet, and we presented him the award, and that was the first Naismith Trophy 52 years ago. In my day-to-day responsibilities, it runs the gamut because we are a lean staff. So it's everything from events, public relations, marketing, sponsorship, board of directors, governance, financials. There are days and weeks where I spend a lot of my time getting office supplies, but it's rewarding because I own it.
Yeah.
I don't own the award and I don't own the organization, but I own the job. And I've had people say over the years, oh, I couldn't do that because I don't know if I'd be effective. And I always say, you'd be effective knowing that if you don't do the work, it doesn't get done. Mm-hmm. So you really have to have unbelievable self-discipline, mm-hmm. and you have to take pride in it. Mm-hmm. And that's not to suggest that in other jobs you can avoid those two, but in any other company, you generally have teammates and staff that you can divvy up the work.
Right.
Different people take on different chunks of it. Mm-hmm. And I have that now. I've been very fortunate between our board of directors and college students who want to be interns, contractors, pro bono support. We have a pretty substantial staff that covers a number of things that need to get done. But ultimately, I'm the one who's accountable. I have to make sure that they're getting the work done or else it falls back on me.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're the only one. Buck stops with you, right? So you got to... So when you're working for yourself, you know, you've got all this stuff... Yet you have a board. How important do you feel is that to bounce some of these ideas and some of these things, having a board in place when you're, you know, by yourself?
Having a board, specifically the board of directors we have, is absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. We have a senior team, an executive committee that governs over the rest of the board. And I bounce ideas off them all the time because I don't know it all.
Right.
I've told people over the years, I'm not the smartest guy, but I've had a lot of experience. So I lean on that when deciding, should we move forward on this? Should we do away with that? I also feel the weight of the world that if I'm gonna make a change, it's not just in 2019, 2020, 2021. I have to look back to all the people who've touched this organization since 1956 and can't make haphazard decisions just because I wanna make a change.
What you said right there is like the key pinnacle point in leadership is you don't have to have all the answers. And I think some young entrepreneurs and some young business leaders, they think that they have to show everybody that they know it all. And that's not right. And having people, whether it's you know, people around you influencing, you can bounce ideas off a board, only makes you a stronger, effective leader. You know, so that's awesome that you know, you're open about that. You know, 'cause it's difficult for some leaders to do.
Part of being a good leader is realizing your inadequacies or your faults.
Yep.
I have no problem telling people, look, I'm not an expert on this, mm-hmm. or I don't have experience on that, or I think this is the direction we want to go, but I'd love other input. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, people embrace that because, number one, they want to be a part of the solution.
Right.
The more people I can include in decisions, the better we all are, because not only do we get their perspective, but we get their sense of pride and ownership that they've contributed to it.
Right.
And in the end, the product is better. We are not an organization that wants to stand up and pat ourselves on the back. We want to do what's right and be smart about it. And whoever comes up with the idea or whoever is leading the activation, great. Take it, run with it, and we're all better for it.
So having each and every person has ownership in what they're doing, you know, it's like, that's your thing, go and run with it.
I try to have a number of committees within our organization, and I try to recruit board members to lead those committees. Because again, I want them to have the ownership, and when it's wildly successful, I want them to take the victory lap. Because they're going to want to stay on the organization longer. They're going to feel a sense of success. Mm-hmm. And the other board members might say, how can I do that? I want to get more involved. And all the more reason to have a diverse and strong board so that everybody contributes. I mean, I jokingly say at board meetings, nobody wants to hear me talk the whole meeting. I don't want to hear myself talk throughout the whole meeting. So how do we galvanize more members to get involved? We have a wonderful PR team at Jackson Spalding that handles our communications and our social media. We got an amazing marketing firm in Octagon. And then we have folks on our board that are experts in legal, that know social media, that know events, sponsorships. We tap into a lot of folks in order to get the work done.
Specific people for specific jobs, specific, you know, vendors and specific that understand that.
Without question.
Yeah.
Either part of our board or external.
Yep.
And that led us about 4 years ago when social media was really taking off and we were late to the party, admittedly. We quickly realized that some of the most astute, successful social media folks are college students.
Yeah.
That's all they know.
Yep.
And they live on their phones and they live in social media. So we quickly realized if we could bring them in to create and manage our social media content, it's mutually beneficial because we're getting, I don't want to call them experts, but we're getting staff who know what they're doing. Generally, we want people that love basketball. And they want the experience. I can't tell you how many times people have come to me after they've graduated and they say, I can't find a job because I don't have the right experience or I don't have any experience.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to give them experience as college sophomores, juniors, seniors. And at the end of the day, it's a win-win. We're getting amazing content and they're getting experience that they can take when they graduate as they go out and interview for a job.
And I think that's the biggest thing is for, you know, a lot of these college students, just jump on in, you know, like, of course you're not going to have a huge resume. You're in college, you know? And so if there's an opportunity that's presented to you, go and do it, you know, get that experience. And this way you can build off of that and move on to the next thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I worked to put myself through school. I was kind of a grinder. My grades were nothing ever to brag about.
Yeah.
But I understood growing up at a young age where if I didn't pay for it, I wasn't going to get my degree. So I have a soft spot when I see students like that, that are grinding, that are working, that are balancing a number of things to get themselves through school. And I'll go out of my way to help them, whether it's advice or experience. But there are some really talented college students out there who know the value of taking advantage of opportunities while they're still in college. And when they graduate and they go to find their first job, they have more experience at 22 than I probably had in my late 20s when I got out of school. And so I commend them and I applaud them and I'll do everything I can to give them experience. But one of the interesting things about how I manage young students in college or young folks who are out of college, I don't manage them within a box and say, you're this age with this much experience, you should only know how to do these things. I throw everything at them and I tell them, you might have to hold me back because if you're part of the team and it's a lean team, I'm gonna give you everything I can to get the work done. And they sometimes get wide-eyed and I say, look, if I throw something your way and you're in over your head and you can't do it, then we know you are right where you should be.
Right.
But 9 times out of 10, you're going to take on more than you thought you could, which helps me because now I have someone doing more of the work. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be amazed at the experience you get because you took on more than you gave yourself credit
for. It helps them grow.
Absolutely.
You know, and you'll never know what you're good at unless you go and try and do, you know. And that's the thing is like, that's how you, especially at a young age, you'll learn what your true strengths are and you'll identify what your weaknesses are, which makes you more effective. And without taking on that, without accepting that, you're not going to know, you know, what your true interests are.
That's exactly right. There's no shortage of work here. And if I get able-bodied individuals who want the experience and want the opportunity, they'll get it. It's all a matter of what they make of it. And I remind them that constantly, that you're helping us out and we're helping you by getting the experience, but make no mistake, you have to deliver because this is real world. This is not a project in college. And if there's a failure or, you know, there has to be a trust. I'm letting them take our social media accounts and run with them.
Right.
It's a bit of a risk.
Yep.
But when they see that I'm trusting them to do it, they want to work harder to deliver.
Yeah, especially in a position of leadership, you know, because it's always that authority thing, right? So you're already an authority, but being transparent as a leader is the best thing you can do for your people because, again, you already sit in a position of authority, so you don't need to show your work because you already got to where you are because, you know, you're in that position. But being transparent helps build that trust. And then also it allows them say, well, he's being completely transparent with me. I'm going to really, really work hard for this and get wherever we're going, whether it's a project or the organization, because of that transparency, because I know that that leadership is going to be open with me. So that's really cool to see that.
There's a sense that they don't want to let us down. Mm. And the more interns we have that do our social media, there's a sense of pride amongst all of them, and nobody wants to be the weak link. Nobody wants to look you in the eye and say, I know you gave me a wonderful opportunity and I'm sorry I failed. And so that's, they're gonna work harder.
Yeah.
And it makes us better. Yeah. You know, just to put in perspective, 4 years ago we had one intern pushing out some tweets and a couple of posts on Instagram. They did a nice job. We got a rhythm, we got a system in place, and we were off and running. This season alone, we're gonna have 11 interns.
Wow.
And they're all in college.
Yeah.
And they're getting great direction from our agency, who have senior level folks who understand social media and can help teach and guide them. But it's 11 college students that are leading arguably one of our most important marketing activation programs, our social media.
So what are some pieces of advice that you would give college grads or people that want to get into this profession?
I talk to a lot of college students. I'm a mentor to a student at my alma mater. And they ask a lot of questions. They're very cognizant of what's next. Because if you think about high school and college, an authoritative figure tells you, if you take all these classes at the end, you're gonna get a degree. Well, that doesn't happen in the real world. And so as they get to be juniors or early in their senior year, they are overwhelmed with, oh my gosh, what's next? And how do I get there and how do I achieve? So they ask me a lot, and I tell them all the time, I'm not the expert here, but I have a lot of experience. I'll share with you my experience, both as someone your age looking to break into the workforce and hiring people over the decades. But I tell them, talk to a lot of people, find a mentor, find somebody who's also had experience, because I don't know it all. All I know is what I've experienced. Some of the things I tell them are, network as much as humanly possible. In today's world, it's never been easier with LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah.
And social media, with cell phones, you get their number and you can send a quick text if you need advice. So you should always look to connect with people as much as humanly possible. Get experience, volunteer for anything and everything. So in the sports world, I tell them, you know, you might be the person handing out media credentials before a game. You might be the person making copies and handing out statistics at halftime. Some of it's not terribly glamorous, but it's something you could put on your resume.
Oh, yeah.
And what they don't realize is it's not just putting it on your resume, it's the person that you're working with or working for in 5 years could be running a department like that.
It's so funny because, I mean, it's exactly the same in the movie business, right? Because the movie business is a very tight-knit group. People work with the same people all the time. And a lot of people say, well, how do I break in? It's like, well, you need to be willing to do some of those less glamorous jobs. Because what you're doing is you're building the relationships with these people that eventually are going to hire you. You know, and you also, your classmates too, you never know who's going to pop up and who's going to get a different position, you know, that could, you know, because you networked, right, you stayed in contact with all your classmates, that's an opportunity, you know, or you can collaborate somebody. So, taking those less glamorous jobs in the beginning to achieve what you want for the future is important.
And what they don't realize a lot of the time is they're being tested. So they think they're showing up and doing a job and then they're done and they'll put it on their resume and they'll move on. What they don't realize is that could be a future employer who's looking to see, will they do the work?
Yep.
Will they complain about it? Will they work hard? Will they say, give me more opportunity? Will they complain that it's not glamorous enough? Mm-hmm. It's all a test.
Yep.
So networking, getting experience, I tell them all the time, be willing to move. Be willing to take on a job that doesn't sound like perhaps the best job in the world. Go do it for 18 months or 2 years and move on and get experience and pad your resume and make connections along the way. When I talk to students, I always ask them, who in this class is majoring in CEO? And they all look at me kind of funny, like I misspoke. And I say, when you guys graduate, are you going to be a CEO? And then they realize what I'm saying. We all start from somewhere. We all have a background where when we got out of school, our first job was in sales or marketing or events or anything.
Yep.
And eventually you bounce around and move around and you work your way up. And then one day you might become a CEO or a C-suite level employee or an executive vice president, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But we all start somewhere and we all grow. And so I use that advice to say, don't worry about your first job at 22. Your job is to get experience, to show your employer you're going to work hard, that you're going to contribute. Mm-hmm. And when the time is right, you move on. And the advice I give them, a friend of mine gave me great advice. He said, when you take any job at any level of your career, write down 5 things you want to get out of that job, put it in a piece of paper and put it in your desk drawer and just leave it. Because if you think about it, when someone comes along with a great offer to hire you away, what do? You analyze it, you think about it, and then you say, well, am I really ready to leave this job? Pull out that piece of paper. What was it you wanted to achieve in that job? Whether you're 22, 32, 50, 60, your needs and your interests will change, but there's still things you want to get out of that job. And so I look back when I left Nike to go to Home Depot, when I left Home Depot to go to the Atlanta Sports Council. Was I ready to leave? Had I checked those boxes of the things I had set out to do? More often than not, yes. Makes it easy to make that decision. Yeah. I've done everything I can here. I'm ready to move on. So those are just some of the pieces of advice I give to youngsters. Everybody's different. I do caution those who feel like they know it all. Mm-hmm. They might, but if they come across that way, it's going to rub some people wrong. One of the accounts I worked on when I was at Ketchum in Chicago, I ran the Wendy's business for years, and Dave Thomas mm-hmm. was the founder of Wendy's. Yep. And one of his sayings I thought was great. He said, a goal without a plan is just a dream. And when you stop and you think about it, you're right. It's back to that sheet of paper that you write down. If you have goals of whatever it might be, and you don't have a plan in place, you're just dreaming.
Yep.
And more often than not, you're never going to get there. Now, people say, well, if I put the plan in place, what if it gets derailed? It might get derailed. It probably will get derailed.
Figure out another plan then, and you just got to keep doing that. And I think that's a great thing for any young person, you know, is like, yes, you can have these big dreams, but just make sure you put structure and a plan to get there.
Exactly.
And you can't be afraid to fail. Use your failures as learning lessons. And if something happens, you just readjust your plan.
I think one of the quotes I love is whatever the action is 10% of it. How you react to it is 90%. People aren't going to remember how your plan got derailed or what came along that made you change paths, or you were smitten by an offer because it was a lot of money with a lot of material perks, so you took it and it was a disaster and now you're off your plan. Nobody's going to care what happened. They want to see how you react to it.
Yep.
And that's not just the workforce, that's life.
Yep.
Right? We all think we might have a plan in life, and more often than not, we zigzag.
Yeah.
We go sideways a little bit.
Something was explained to me is like, it's not that bad things are happening. It's situations are happening. Mm-hmm. And it's how you respond to that situation will determine the ultimate outcome.
Yep.
And so I think if we go through life and we just look at, hey, this is life. Here's a situation. How I deal with it is the way that outcome is going to be. I dictate that.
That's a great piece of advice, and it's a great plan to live by, because you're right, we don't know what's coming. We might be the most prepared, organized, detailed person in the world, and you're still going to get thrown a curveball. Because in the world we're in, it's, I need this, I talk to that person, I hope they can deliver, oh, they can't. Well, do you get upset and walk away, and or do you take the time to say, hey, thanks, maybe we can revisit this down the road?
Yeah.
Because again, that person isn't going to remember the interaction or the transaction you discussed. They're going to remember that you handled it in a professional, mature fashion, or you didn't.
Right.
And if it's the latter, it's going to stick with you. So you might be upset. you might be frustrated, and you could go home from work and you could vent, you could be upset, but you don't want to give that off publicly because that's what you're remembered by. And you know, without our integrity, without our character, what else do we have?
Right.
You could have 40 years of amazing work experience. If you're not a good person, you don't treat people well, you don't work hard, it's going to come back to bite you.
Yep.
So those are some of the intangibles that I tell when I'm talking to folks who are looking for experience. And I root for them too. And I tell all of our interns, you know, my job at the end of this is to help you try to find a job. I'm not sure if I can, but I'll call anybody I know. I'll reach out to anybody I know, because if they're going to work hard for us, you know, I want them to see that payment, that payback at the end. And it's all in what you make of it, though. And, you know, we talk a lot about talented college students breaking into the workforce. There are some who feel like they should have had more yesterday. And those are a little bit tougher to try to manage because they might think they know it all. They might think they have it all. They might think they deserve more. And unfortunately, they're going to realize the hard way that's not going to happen in life.
Right. So I really appreciate our conversation, Eric. This has been really cool. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I appreciate talking to you, and thanks for inviting me on as your guest.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the episode. If you guys enjoyed it, show some love, give me a thumbs up, and subscribe. Also, make sure you check out our exclusive C-Level group on Facebook.